For the week of June 21st, 2015, this is Showbiz Sandbox, episode 284, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And in Birmingham, Alabama, I'm Michael Giltz.
You're still in the South, Michael.
I'm still in the South, but I'll probably be back in New York next week.
Why? Is it cooler in New York? Because I know last week it was hot, Africa hot.
That's right. And
Orlin Malon was our first listener to write in to dirt@showbizsandbox.com, and he told us that the phrase, "it's hot, Africa hot," came from Neil Simon's play, and film actually, Biloxi Blues.
Well, well done, Orlin. Thank you for being the first one to write in. How else can people contact us?
Well, they can call us if they'd like, 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. Of course, they can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, the Microsoft Marketplace, but I don't know, you can't really write into us that way, but you can rate and review the shows on those podcast aggregators. You can also follow us on Twitter, @ShowbizSandbox. I guess that's a good way to get in touch with us. Or you can like us on Facebook. Showbiz Sandbox is our, you just search for Showbiz Sandbox and our page should come up. So those are all ways to get in touch with us, when we're not here talking to you regularly in your earballs.
That's right. When you want to tell us how much you love 3D, that's the way to reach us. And what are we going to talk about on this week's show?
Are people writing to us telling us? Well, I guess
I love it. The people who defended the 3D market, I would just say they all said, yeah, I know it's not very good and it's kind of annoying, but nonetheless, it's working. Nobody wrote in to say, I love 3D. You're crazy. I want to watch everything in 3D. I want to watch my mother in 3D. No, but anyway.
Okay, that went in a very strange direction. But right now in Barcelona, Spain, my partner in crime, Patrick Von Sikowski, over there at Celluloid Junkie, he is covering Cinema Europe, or is it Cine Europe? It's basically CinemaCon, but in Europe. And that's taking place this week in Barcelona. You know, if I had gone, we wouldn't be able to do a show.
What are the big topics there? Do you know?
4D, 3D, HDR, all of
that. That's right. I think Inside Out was shown in 4D.
What?
Well, no. Well, there was some movie in Japan that was shown in 4D.
San Andreas, maybe?
Maybe, but I thought there was a new movie. I thought it was Inside Out. It was talking about its revenue overseas. No. It's never mind. It's Dragon Ball Z.
Dragon Ball Z. Okay.
I knew it was some big film, and that's back on the charts this week. We're making people confused. It's all my fault.
Well, another little calendar note. Karen Woodward's birthday is today,
is it?
Yes, our former co-host who has gone off to greener pastures, but different pastures.
Pretty greener. One-time co-host, long-time friend.
Yes.
Well, good to know. Well, we'll have to reach out to her on social media. And what will she be listening to on the show? We're covering your cohort is in Europe, covering
Cine Europe. Something like that, yeah.
And when he's listening to this podcast to catch up with you, what will he hear about?
Well, last week, Michael, you might recall, we told you about Apple's new music streaming service. Lots of indie labels and even superstar Taylor Swift were not happy about some of the details announced during that launch. On Inside Baseball, we'll discuss what just happened in the fight of artists versus Apple and why. Here's a hint. It's not about being fair to indie labels. On this week's show, we're also going to talk about why the indie film Whiplash is becoming a smash hit in Japan. I don't necessarily know what that means, but we're also going to talk about how both Jurassic Park and Inside Out tore up the box office and why basketball... Okay, my goodness, I have no idea. Why is basketball going to be the canary in the coal mine when it comes to the dominance of people skipping cable and going over the top? How is that going to be possible? We'll certainly let you know. Of course, during Big Deal or Big Whoop, we'll cover all the big entertainment headlines from the past week. But first, as always, we turn it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz to fill us in on the weekend's box office. Or, as he just kind of showed us, he's going to confuse us on the weekend's box office.
Well, hopefully not. We're looking at the box office around the world, not just North America. We get our info from RentTrack. We also pull info from Box Office Profits, Box Office Mojo, Variety, Hollywood Reporter, you name it. And the number one movie around the world is, of course, Jurassic World. Still tearing it up. $262 million this weekend. The second biggest weekend for a movie in North America of all time. It almost became the biggest second weekend of all time, if that makes any sense. We'll have to see if the numbers change come Monday night or Tuesday. But $262 million over the weekend. It's at $981 million as of Sunday night. Today is Monday when we're recording the show. Before Monday is over, it will pass $1 billion, and it does that in 13 days, the fastest movie of all time to pass the $1 billion mark. That's Jurassic World, a massive hit, but it's not the only one. Also doing terrific business is Inside Out, the Disney Pixar film. It grossed $132 million around the world. It's just opened up in a number of markets, but they're smaller markets, so it's got a long ways to go. But it had a big, big opening in North America, set a lot of records for Pixar itself. It's literally, when you look at the box office charts, there are so many movies that are based on franchises or books or TV shows or whatever that they're not original films. This is an original film, and it's like the biggest or the second biggest of all time for an original movie. Yeah, I think it's the biggest now. It passed Avatar, which had the previous opening weekend record for a movie not based on another property, meaning it's not part of a franchise. It's not based on a book or a TV show or a song. It's just a movie. Somebody wrote a script, they made a movie, and it opened. This is the biggest opening weekend of all time for any movie that's original.
In all fairness to James Cameron and Avatar, because people like to pick on James Cameron.
Who's picking on him? He's rich.
I know, I'm kidding. You know, that movie was like 9 days long, so they could only get one showing in per day.
That doesn't make as much a difference anymore, but it was a massive opening weekend for Inside Out, and it needs it because it cost $175 million to make. It's going to get to $500 million just to show profitability. But it will definitely get there. This is going to be a big, big success. Jurassic World, of course, also a pricey movie. But when you're at $1 billion, you're also going to be doing very, very well. When you look at the top 10 chart, you've got a lot of successful movies. But of course, making a lot of money doesn't mean you've been a hit. Look at Tomorrowland. You have to make a lot of money based on your budget. And one movie that's doing that is SPL2. This is a Chinese action film. It actually stands for, what is it? Didn't I write it down? Sat Paolo. Oh, I did not write it down. It's sort of a sequel to a film from 2005, also nicknamed SPL, but it's really a sequel in name only. It's not the same characters, not the same story. It doesn't follow on from it. It's just the same idea. Cops fighting corruption, both inside and outside the police force. In this case, a cop becomes a junkie so he can fight a crime syndicate, but he gets thrown into jail, and there he discovers an organ donor ring run by the warden. There is crime everywhere in this movie. But it cost $23 million to make. It made $29 million over the weekend, and it's at $40 million and counting, so it's well on its way to profitability. So is San Andreas, the Dwayne The Rock Johnson movie. This guy owns the world, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, I think so. He's the biggest star.
Chris Pratt is the biggest star in the world. Maybe Dwayne Johnson is. I mean, he's got San Andreas, which made $27 million over the weekend. It's at $400 million and counting. He had Fast and Furious 7. And of course, now he's got a new HBO series, Ballers. You know, he's got a hit TV show, a hit franchise, a new hit film. I mean, the guy's done. Maybe he'll write a book next.
Well, you know, who else is doing quite well is Melissa McCarthy. She's kind of back from two different, I guess, two films that didn't do too well, Tammy being one of them.
Right. They were sort of received a little indifferently as far as profitability. That's one question. But you also want to, of course, make good movies. That always helps long term. And Spy has gotten great reviews for her. It grossed another $20 million over the weekend. It's grossed $170 million worldwide. And it cost just $65 million to make. I don't know what sort of back end Melissa McCarthy is getting at this stage. But, you know, you're tripling your budget, you're going to be just fine. So that's another successful film. At number six is Minions, which is, of course, the spinoff from Despicable Me. It's opening up overseas in just a few territories. It made $12 million over the weekend. Unlike the Inside Out and most other big budget animated films, Despicable Me and Despicable Me 2 and presumably Minions, though I could not find a budget number for them, presumably Minions cost $60, $70, $80 million to make. That's what the other movies cost. So this is a relatively low budget animated film. And it's getting to a good start off overseas.
But and at the end of the day, they could make this film break even, maybe even lose some money theatrically. They will still make a mint when it comes to merchandising.
Well, you can kill merchandising with a bad movie.
True.
I thought you were going to talk about DVD sales and all that stuff. Used to be family films made so much money on VHS and then DVD. Nowadays, I don't think that's as true anymore that you get the multiples that you used to where you'd make just, you know, if you made $40 million at the box office, a family film could make another $40 or $60 million on VHS. Well, that's not the case anymore necessarily, but it's certainly a popular franchise. Isn't there a TV show too?
I don't think so.
No, it's those darn penguins that have their own TV show. The
Minions
probably feel cheated I was trying to look up the budget for Minions, and I was online, and all I found out was that some fundamentalist Christian thinks Minions and Despicable Me is a series designed to prepare children for the Antichrist.
Okay.
They show pictures of, you know, of the guy of Gnu or whatever his name is, and all the minions like bowing and praying to him and saying, this movie is designed to, you know, prepare the way for the Antichrist.
Well, I can tell you that if people don't know this movie is being released this summer, they are, you know, I don't know. They're not on this planet, because right now the Cinerama Dome in Los Angeles is covered with a big yellow tarp, and it has a whole bunch of inflatable minions climbing up it. You can't miss it. It's on Sunset Boulevard. And every box that comes to my house from Amazon now has Minions plastered all over it.
Ah, well, that's good marketing. It's a very profitable franchise for them. And The Classified File is not a franchise. It's a drama in South Korea, but it's based on a true story. And it opened strongly this week, and it grossed $8.5 million. I like this plot. I think this will be remade by Hollywood. It's about a little girl getting kidnapped. And then after a few weeks, there are no leads. They've not heard anything from the kidnappers. The cops are giving up. They think the child is dead, you know, every hour that passes.
And this is a plot. This is a story you like, right? This is a plot.
Well,
you
like. I mean, I think it's a movie. What are you talking about? I don't like people being kidnapped. I just think it's an interesting plot. It's apparently based on a true story from 1978. The film is set in 1978, I believe. The mother, of course, refuses to give up. She turns to a psychic. And the psychic says the child can be saved if they enlist a certain veteran detective who does not believe the psychic, thinks it's all malarkey. But of course, things come out true. They pair together to try and save the child. I don't know how it ends, but I can guess. But it just sounds like a classic, you know, mixed buddy comedy, not comedy, mixed buddy film. Two people of clashing personalities trying to rescue a child. It just sounds ripe for remake.
Well, isn't Winona Ryder in a Netflix, maybe it's a series where she plays the mother of a child that's been kidnapped?
I didn't know that. There are so many shows on TV. I don't know how anyone can keep track of all of them.
There is no way to keep track of all.
There's too much. But it's always been the case for music and books. You know, there's just far more than you could ever stay on top of. I don't know how anybody writes like a best books of the year list. You can have 100 people make suggestions, but there's no way one person can tell you what the best books of the year are. I think we're at that stage with television. I think it's almost impossible to stay on top. I mean, you couldn't watch. Even watching the stuff that people are excited by is becoming very, very difficult.
Well, if only there was a website that could tell me about good books.
That's right.
Maybe you should start TV Filter. Forget about Book Filter.
I have, because it is hard for people to keep track of TV. So that's there's no question about that, that having a website like Book Filter for TV makes sense, where you have, you know, you have categories like reality TV and competition shows and sitcoms and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And you just talk about the best shows of the week and help them find shows they didn't know about that are on channels they don't normally watch. And, you know, I think there is a real need for a gatekeeper for television to help people find what's on, because your TV guide.
A gatekeeper or a curator.
That's right, a curator. When you look at a guide online, you know, you're scrolling for hours just to see what's on that particular time slot. Happily, the movie theater, it's still easy to keep your arms wrapped around everything, at least the good movies. Mad Max Fury Road is certainly one of the best reviewed movies of the year, right up there with Inside Out, which, as we predicted, got great reviews across the board. Mad Max Fury Road grossed another $7 million. It's at $350 million and counting, which means it's still a ways away from profitability. Please, China, come to the rescue.
And that came in eighth place. That's internationally,
right.
Yeah.
Just, did I say that wrong? Okay.
No. Just trying to give our listeners kind of some perspective where we are on the chart.
At number nine is Insidious Chapter 3, a horror film. It's at $77 million worldwide. That also made just about $7 million this weekend. Same for Dragon Ball Z Resurrection F. That's a Japanese animated film. I guess it's being reissued. It came out in April, I think, but it's now grossed another $7 million. Or now maybe it's come out in some new territories, because it's in eight territories now. It's made $37 million so far. It's the 19th film in the Dragon Ball series. So clearly a popular franchise. And this one, I think, did better than the most recent one. So it's an uptick in the Dragon Ball world. And at number 11, a movie that opened in North America, was a hit at Sundance. Sperling didn't get to see it. I wonder if he saw it now. It's called Dope. It grossed a modest, okay, $6 million over the weekend. For considering how wide they opened it, it's not a great opening, but we'll have to see if it has legs and how it does.
Okay, I did see this film. Okay,
I would describe it as risky business in the hood.
I did see this film. I did not see Me, Earl, the Dying Girl, His Mother, Two
Yeah, two that kids one I want to see as yeah. well. I'm looking forward to seeing that. What did you think of Dope?
I like Dope. I thought, I didn't see Me and Earl, so I can't say whether Dope should have won, but it was definitely one of the best movies I saw up at Sundance this year. I was a little surprised. Actually, maybe it was at Cannes. I think it was in Cannes, actually. I could be wrong about that. But Open Road picked it up for $7 million here in North America.
This is Dope we're talking about.
This is Dope. And it's a good film. It's worth seeing, actually. It's kind of a thinking man's risky business, as you said.
What? But, yeah. No, I did not say that. Business is a great film. It's not a non-thinking man's.
Okay,
risk.
Fine.
I said it's a risky business in the hood.
Yeah, no, it's
risky
a good
business
movie.
Is a great film. This film is not anywhere near as good as Risky Business.
And I guess it opened on 2,000 screens, as you mentioned.
Yeah, that's a lot of screens.
Yeah, and it made 50% of its revenue, $3 million. From just those, 1,000 screens. So I would agree with you.
Doesn't that make sense? If it made $6 million, it made $3 million on 1,000 screens and another $3 million on the other three? I mean, what are you talking about?
You're right, actually. I read something somewhere. I probably should have paid more attention to it. But basically, the gist of it was...
They were trying to say that probably did better in the cities than in the rural areas, I'm sure.
At the end of the day, they should have platformed this release.
Well, I don't know how much they spent to open it. That would tell us, how far it's going to get on profitability. I don't think it was a huge spend. I mean, certainly 2,000 screens, but as far as their budget and the marketing, it's certainly not like a big summer movie. They didn't push it that much. So we don't know what they outlaid for marketing. What's your guess? 5 million, 8 million?
I wouldn't be shocked if they spent another 7 million.
Yeah, that modest. That's pretty modest for a movie opening on 2,000 screens, isn't it?
Yeah, but still, you're only going to spend, it depends on where you place the media buys.
Sure. So they bought it for $7 million. Then maybe they spent $7 million to open it. We'll have to see where it ends up. It's a cute little film. I thought it was pretty clever. I enjoyed it. It was good enough. I wish it was better. I thought it was pretty good. I don't think it'll be on my best of the year list.
What you're talking about? What movie now? Since we
Dope.
Okay.
Dope. We're still talking about Dope.
Okay.
Who's confused? Nobody except did you smoke some pot?
No, oh my gosh, no, I didn't. I was busy trying to find out. Word is that 50% of all theaters are grossing 18% of Dope's business, which is
what
isn't
what?
A good sign. You see, so well, I didn't read it properly the first time.
That's the most confusing stat I've ever heard.
Which
try
is why
say
I couldn't remember
English.
It.
Right. You're saying they made 80% of their money in 20% of their screens, meaning they made their money in the big cities where Black people live. They didn't make their money in the suburbs and in because I'm guessing it's a predominantly Black audience. That's probably who it appealed to very strongly. Young people should go. It's got a hip hop vibe. It's not set in the 90s, but it's about three kids who are obsessed with the 90s. As a Black kid, a mixed race kid, and a lesbian. I'm not sure of her racial origin, but there's some amusing stuff in it. It's kind of funny. It's kind of like Risky Business. He's a good kid, but he gets into trouble over this, this one day, and he's got an interview with Harvard that looms over him, and that's sort of the plot of the movie. I thought it was pretty cute.
Yeah, it's a good movie. Much like Inside Out, which you didn't like.
No, I did like Inside Out. I just didn't love it.
How could you not love this movie?
I have high expectations for Pixar. And the reviews were so good coming in that I felt it's one of those things where you got too riled up, though. I guess I couldn't not be riled up because it's Pixar. They haven't had a great movie in a while. I was really hoping this would be a great movie. I absolutely liked it. I think it's worth seeing. I think it's good. I think my problems are twofold. One, I just didn't kind of like the visual of the Inside the Brain. I didn't like the way the characters looked. It was somehow too cartoony, if that makes any sense. They just looked a little fake. I don't know how to put this. I mean, you're inside someone's brain, so of course it's fake. There's no real visual look. But the visual look they came up with, to me, felt a little artificial. I wasn't always aware that they were sort of just drawn characters. And the other problem is some of the voice actors. I find Bill Hader a very boring actor. And I like Mindy Kaling, but I found their characters and their voice work uninteresting. I mean, she's supposed to be Disgust. It's a movie about a little girl and you go inside her brain and it's like Herman's Head, the sitcom from the 90s, by the way. So it's about seeing what happens inside your brain when you're dealing with stuff. You've got joy, sadness, anger, disgust, and fear. And they sort of work in tandem and sometimes one dominates more than the other. And joy is fine. Sadness is fine. And Lewis Black is a good anger. But I found Bill Hader and Mindy Kaling's performances a little weak. And I found their characters a little weak. I mean, Disgust was like a fashionista. She wasn't Disgust. She was just like a valley girl. So
yes.
It didn't, it's a really, really, really tight, high concept. I don't feel like they came through with those two characters. And I felt like three quarters of the way through the movie, they were still explaining stuff. And, you know, I think that they were laying pipe for 90% of the movie, which means explaining out to people the premise and the setup and how things work. That's sort of what Hollywood means by laying pipe. And I felt they were doing this throughout most of the movie. Well, and I wasn't even always clear what was, you know, well, all right, the island has destroyed her island of lacrosse. What does that mean? You know,
not her island of lacrosse. It was
her island of hockey gets rebuilt in 5 minutes. So it's not that traumatic. But it was a smart movie. It was interesting. I liked it. I think parents with kids will cry, you know. But I liked it. It was a nice, bold concept. I thought it was well done. I recommend it to people. It's just not great. Maybe I'll see it. I'm sure I'll see it again. Maybe I'll like it more.
Well, I know a movie that people are seeing again and again, I think, because my kids want to see it again, is Jurassic World. I was at the bagel store, which is kind of an oxymoron or an oxy, whatever it is. It's kind of an anomaly here in Los Angeles because, you know, let's face it, we don't do bagels very well here. Not like you guys in New York, Michael. But there I am. I walk in. There's like a whole table full of senior citizens. What are they talking about? They're all talking about Jurassic Park, the original film, and Jurassic World. And I'm
really?
Thinking, yeah, I'm thinking, they're all talking, well, you know, like in the original one, you know, hey, Spielberg got that guy. He found this guy. He, you know, Spielberg's not going to let this movie go. He took some personal attention to this Jurassic World. And then I go to the gym, and there's another group of senior citizens. I don't know why they're all over the you know, they're basically over 60. And they're all talking about Jurassic World and Jurassic Park. And I'm thinking, what is going on here? Why I never hear people talking about movies anymore.
It looks like it's obviously one of the biggest hits of all time. And that's due in part to inflation and pricing and the fact that it can make so much money so quickly because we have the bandwidth now to handle that. So when these movies set new records of getting 100 million faster or 200 or 300, it means the movie's popular, but I'm just not that impressed or I don't really care that much because it's just, we have the ability now. You know, so that to me, it's not that it's telling that it's hitting $1 billion. Obviously, that means it's a big smash hit. But the fact of how fast it makes certain amounts of money when it's a big brand name film. Well, so what? That just means you can, you know, and that's and even though they were off by 50% of how much in demand, they thought maybe 100 million. Do we mean 200 million? You know, they're so off, but it doesn't matter.
The box office pundits,
right? The theaters. Well, no, the studios and the distributors, you know, they even once they see ticket sales racking up as the weekend approaches, they obviously adjusted and added. They can add showtimes on a blink of an eye. They can add this. They can add that. And so they can expand and be prepared for it. They're not going to lose out on money because of unexpected demand. You know, they can accommodate pretty much anything.
Well, I mean, have you seen it's kind of worked its way into the cultural conversation. There was a whole thing with zookeepers kind of in different animals' pens, penguins and, you know, I mean, just a whole bunch of kind of being Chris Pratt trying to tame the vicious beasts as he did with the Velociraptor.
Was it on TV or what are you
talking
about?
No, this was a social media thing that just kind of started off.
They were being cute, pretending to tame a penguin or something.
Yeah, like a whole bunch, like four penguins. No, everybody, you know, calm down. it was kind of very funny.
Oh, that's cool.
Zebras and it was just like this weird thing that all of a sudden all the zookeepers across the country and the world in some cases were doing this.
Their bosses probably told them, if you don't get on social media and become popular, your job is out.
Right. We're going to get this Chris Pratt guy in here.
That's right. Well, next week, people will be talking about, of course, a foul-mouthed teddy bear because Ted 2 opens up this Friday, along with Big Game, which is about this is in North America we're talking about a teenager helping a U.S. president stranded in the woods, and Max, which is a film not about a soldier returning from Afghanistan with post-traumatic stress syndrome, but a dog that served in Afghanistan that is returning home and must deal with post-traumatic stress disorder.
I've heard some awards talk around his performance in this, his canine performance.
Well, they have an award for the best dog at Cannes, but I don't think the Oscars is quite ready to do that. I'm sure Rin Tin Tin got one at some point, but it was probably honorary.
What is it? The Palm Dog, right? In Cannes?
Something like that.
Well, you might recall, we talked about Dope, and we talked about Me and Earl and Dying Girl. Those were Sundance movies this year, and last year, in 2014, Whiplash won the best picture, the big prize, basically, at Sundance. It won Sundance.
The Audience Award and the Critics Award. Yeah, it won everything.
Yeah, walked off with that. But then, I guess, it, you know, was nominated for an Academy Award this year. And
it won.
Well,
Best Supporting Actor.
I'm talking about Best Picture, but yes, it won Best Supporting Actor. And now it's winning lots of bucks over there in Japan, as you mentioned, Michael.
That's right. Japan, Whiplash is becoming a sleeper hit. Despite all the accolades and attention and the fact that it made good amount of money given what it was, and it got Oscar nominations even for Best Picture and won some, you know, it's still a small film with actors that most people have never heard of around the world, but it did translate. It's doing really well in Japan. They opened it small. Word of mouth was great. Celebrities chimed in. Everybody loved, and it didn't even open in the top 10. It was a real platform release. And to everyone's surprise, it's really caught fire. And now they're reopening it, putting in more screens, more stuff. And one big reason why it's doing so well, they changed the name.
That's right. Instead of calling it Whiplash, they called it Sessions.
Session. Whiplash did not translate. They didn't know what that would mean or how that worked, but session, they understood jazz or drumming musicians, a session where you make music. And somehow that title translated well. People got the idea of music and all that sort of stuff. And it's really clicked with audiences. It looks like it could, you know, go past $5 million in Japan alone, which is what the movie cost to make. So that's a great job.
Well, it costs like $3.5 million to make. Yeah. So,
well, there you go. But that's still not as popular as it was in South Korea. They made $11 million in South Korea, almost as much as they made in the US. So a big hit there as well.
Wow. So,
Whiplash, a movie where you think, you know, this isn't going to work overseas. Nobody's going to care. You never know.
That's true. And, I would have thought you would have loved Inside Out, for instance. But
I liked
but no.
I liked it. I have an open mind, and when I'm ready, I'll watch it again, and maybe I'll cry tears of joy.
Well, you know, Whiplash in Japan, it's been out for 10 weeks now. I'm hoping Inside Out has some legs, too.
Oh, it absolutely will. There's no question about it. I mean, it's great reviews. One of the biggest openings of all time. Hollywood Reporter did a big story about, oh, it's number two, but nobody should care because, well, of course nobody cares. You know, it's profit. It's a huge hit. Great reviews. The fact that Jurassic World had a massive second one, who cares? You know, Pixar had a number one film every time it came out. This one isn't number one at the box office. So what? Anybody that cares about that, rather than the fact that it's tremendous, their best reviewed movie probably since Toy Story 3, hugely profitable, another win for Disney and Pixar. You know, that's what matters.
That's true. And you know what else matters, actually?
It depends
on what matters in life. Like, you know, if you're a cable company, what matters, or a cable network, what matters is that you can get some retransmission fees. That's really what matters.
What does that mean? What is retransmission fees?
That's when basically the MSOs, the cable operators, Time Warner Cable, Comcast, Cox, whoever your local cable provider are or is here in the United States, that's when they pay. And by the way, this is done overseas as well. They pay every network a certain amount to be, you know, to rebroadcast the signal to subscribers.
Right. When AMC or History Channel or Discovery Channel is on your cable system, they get paid a certain amount of money every month for the people who subscribe to that system. So if you've got Time Warner Cable and you get Discovery Channel, they get maybe a nickel or a dime or 8 cents or 15 cents for every person who subscribes to cable with Discovery on it.
That's right.
So if Time Warner Cable has 60 million subscribers, they all pay a dime every month for AMC. That's what AMC gets from Time Warner Cable. That's,
I think, actually AMC makes a little bit more than that. I think they're probably up to a dollar. But
a dollar, yeah?
I think so. I think right. so.
Okay.
But I'll tell you one thing. ESPN, okay, ESPN is like at $5 or $6. I mean, they're just ridiculously...
Well, they're the number one.
Right. And,
right?
And in large part, yes, they are. All sports
for basic cable.
You know, all the Fox Sports Nets, the Time Warner Sports Net, these regional sports networks, these RSNs, as they're known in the business, they make a killing, $3, $4 per month per subscriber, especially because they've been very successful in getting cable operators to bundle them into these basic cable packages. So you may not care about sports at all, yet you have to pay for it if you want to get ABC, NBC, CBS, your basic, you know, CNN, your basic cable. Well, the NBA, which just finished its world championship, which for some reason...
Record TV ratings, I might add. They had a great television ratings, you know, for their... They had a great series and did great at the box office.
At the box office? Really?
Yeah, on TV, on the ratings.
The ratings, okay. So the small box office. Get it? Because it's a small...
That's right, that's right.
Okay. Well, so they finished their championship series and the Golden State Warriors... You know, congratulations. Sorry, Cleveland.
Biggest ratings in years, if not history. And what did they decide?
They said, you know what? Next year, Why don't we take our League Pass, which is this ability to watch all of the games out of market. So basically, if you live in Cleveland, you're not seeing Cleveland play in Cleveland. It's every game outside the market where you can stream it or you can get it on your cable network. We're going to allow you to buy a single team's games, out-of-market games, or just a single game for $2 to $5 maybe.
Right, so if you live in Oklahoma and you want to watch the Knicks, you can pay and just watch the Knicks next season. Watch all their games.
That's right.
So instead of having to pay $200, which is a big amount, and you get every game from every team, but most of them you probably don't care about. You probably just care about one team or two.
That's until 1,000 games per season. So if you basically live in Oklahoma, you said, and you want to watch the Knicks, you're paying for 1,000 games even though you only want to watch 70.
Right. Well, that's not the way I think about it. But yeah, you're right. It's a high amount, though. $200 to get access to whatever team you want, except for your local team. That's a lot. And they said, all right, we're going to unbundle it. They haven't announced the numbers yet, but maybe $50, something like that, $40, $50, $60 to watch a team the whole season. Or you can just buy an individual game. So maybe you don't want to buy anything, but you say, oh, you know, I don't want to watch that game. Give you $2, $3. You can, you know, pay-per-view that particular game. So NBA is unbundling their package, and they're sort of mimicking what baseball does and a lot of other sports teams do, where they let you buy an out-of-market team for a certain amount of money and have access to all their games. What they haven't done yet is let you buy your in-market team. So if in New York City...
Well, you can buy your in-market team. However, you cannot watch home games. You have to watch, you know, only away games. So
I don't believe that's true. With the Yankees, you can't buy away games. You can't buy anything. I don't think that's true. You just can't buy the Knicks. You can't. Home or away.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's how it works.
Oh, yeah, wow.
No, it's not a blackout because of the... It's like you can't buy the Yankees. You cannot buy a Yankee away game pass. You can't do it. I'm pretty sure the NBA is the same thing. If you're in a market, they want you to watch it on your cable system because they have a lot of money invested in that cable channel. That's where they're, you know, the Yankees, yes, network now is worth $1 billion. That's what it's estimated. They don't want to mess with that. So they want to protect that no matter what. They're afraid to let people buy just the Yankees online. So if you're in New York, you cannot buy a package to watch the Yankees online. You can't go over the top with your local team. I assume that's what the NBA is doing as well. Nothing I saw in the article you linked to said differently, that you cannot buy away games for your home team. You can only buy another team.
And the NBA is the one announcing this, actually. This isn't like speculation. This is actually happening.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
There's
well,
no confusion about that. That's what we started with. The NBA is unbundling. They used to make you buy everything for a big price. Now they've realized that's stupid. And they're going to say, hey, if you want to buy a certain team, you can buy a certain team. You want to buy a certain game, you can buy a certain game. Everything is going over the top.
And by the way, guess who you're buying it from? Are you buying it from Time Warner Cable or Comcast or your local?
No, it's over the top. You're buying it from the NBA.
That's right. So that means there's no, they get 100% of the revenue going directly
and yet
to
they're
them.
They're still afraid to make in-market teams available. They still don't want to mess with that because they make so much money off of it. And they just had their best year ever. But I mean, this is they're way behind other teams. They should have done this a long time ago. It's stupid to make you pay for everything with a big fat fee because most people aren't going to want to pay $200 to get teams that they don't care about. They want to pay $50. That's a far more reasonable amount to pay for your single team.
Well, and that brings us to really this new survey that was released by Digital Smiths. They're kind of a research firm and a survey group that's well respected in the industry. And they announced that they did this survey and they came up with the channels that people would actually pay for in this age of unbundling and over the top, where HBO and you can now buy direct and you don't have to subscribe to cable. All of these networks are trying to reach out to the cord cutters or the cord nevers and scoop up some extra audience.
Right. So they listed every channel and said, which ones would you pay for, basically? And they got a list and they looked at them all. They forgot to include A&E, by the way. So A&E is not on the list.
They'll include it
next time. But whoopsie. I'm sure A&E is just thrilled about that. But they did it. And of course, the major networks are right at the top, right? Pretty much ABC was number one. That makes perfect sense. Who was number two?
Discovery Channel.
Ahead of CBS, ahead of NBC, ahead of Fox was the Discovery Channel.
Yeah, pretty much.
That makes no sense whatsoever. Why would somebody, how did that happen?
Even the group doing this survey said, look, you know, we had to kind of, you know, rub our eyes a little bit on this because certainly what we found based on the survey is not what the ratings reflect. So you have ESPN down at number 20, and that was the big one, that only 36% of those polled would actually pay for ESPN.
But that actually makes sense to me because ESPN has a small core, incredibly devoted audience, right? That 30% of people who want ESPN, they got to get an ESPN. That's why they're still with cable. They're not going to go away until they can get an ESPN on its own. Other people might say, well, I can live without CBS. I can watch it on Hulu. No, if you don't have ESPN, you can't get those shows. You're not going to be a happy camper.
Right.
Right. So I would expect it would be smaller, but more passionate. You know, that's why they're so valuable. Yes, it's only one out of three people, but by God, they want that channel.
Narrow but deep.
That's right. Not that narrow.
Well, true.
You know, they've got some of the highest ratings. But Discovery Channel, they've got hits. They've got Shark Week, of course. They have Deadly Catch, Gold Rush, Mythbusters. There's a lot of popular reality television on Discovery Channel. Though in no world would you ever expect them to outpoll CBS and NBC for what channel would you pay for. But other channels did really well too, didn't they? Channels that, you know, you're not surprised by, I guess.
Well, what channel were you? Comedy Central, maybe? The Weather Channel?
Yeah, I mean, I would think that would have a good name recognition factor. Of course, when Jon Stewart's gone, will they still want to pay for it? There's a lot of good shows on there. Key and Peele, Amy Schumer, Larry Wilmore, you know. So there's a lot of shows. And, of course, people will still watch The Daily Show to see how Trevor Noah does. But, I would expect that to have a good name. But History Channel, that was way up there too, wasn't it?
That was a bit of a surprise. 57.7%, in fact, would be willing to pay for it. Now, here's the thing. This surprised Digital Smiths so much that they said, look, we're probably going to have to repeat this study, but this time actually put how much each channel will cost.
All right, because, so they didn't say, would you pay $1, would you pay $2, would
right,
you pay $3?
Exactly.
They just said, would you want this channel? And they said, yes, I want this channel.
Right, exactly. Like if they were able to do their own bundle and they were able to pick like between 20 and I think it was 20 and 35 channels, which ones would make it? And that's the ones that would make it.
And this is what people say they want. It's coming. They will get it soon. And we'll have to see how it all works out. The big thing for me is I hope it becomes as easy as possible for you to add a channel for a day, a week, or a month. Because there's always going to be some new show that you hear about that's on a different channel from one that you don't have, if this is the way you go. And you're going to want to check it out. And it's got to be as easy as possible for you to add that channel or to add that show in some way, or you're never going to discover new shows. You wouldn't know you'd want Discovery Channel if you never had that ability. If it wasn't just on your basic cable package and it was there for you to find out, you know, accidentally or on purpose, you wouldn't be watching Shark Week. You wouldn't be watching Deadly Catch.
Right.
So you've got to have, I think the big thing for all these channels is to make sure it's as easy as possible for you to add in a channel really quickly for a short or longer period of time. Well, otherwise, they're going to disappear off the map.
Well, this unbundling, the big thing here is it will do away with the whole business model. I mean, you have the Dodgers selling for $2.7 billion 10 years after they sold for $450 million. You know, how did the value of the team increase so much? Because of the television rights, the broadcast rights were so valuable. Well, if all of a sudden you don't have to subscribe to cable, then cable, you know, the Time Warner Sports Network can't charge me $5 a month, even though I never watch a single game. Well, all of a sudden, that model explodes.
That's right. So the what we're saying here basically is the NBA is catching up with all the other sports companies, with all the, they are companies actually, that's perfectly appropriate. They're catching up with baseball, they're catching up with other people. They had a stupid system going on right now. They've got rid of it. It's, you know, the sooner the better. They've had a great season. They had a great playoffs. They had a great series. They had great TV ratings. And now they're going to make it easier than ever for fans to follow teams out of market. It's what they should have done a long time ago. They're catching up. Bundling is coming. Over the top is crumbling. The question is, how much money are you going to want to pay for Discovery and History and Comedy Central? Because guess what? Those pennies add up really quick.
Yeah, well, when you see, I know this much. When I see my cable bill every month, I'm like, what the? It's kind of a big deal.
All right, keep going.
Yes, indeed, it is time for Big Deal or Big Whoop, our weekly segment where we discuss the top headlines in entertainment and tell you whether they're really important or just overhyped nonsense. Our first story, is this really a story still? Really? WikiLeaks just made Sony unhappy again. They dumped another 270,000 documents, or roughly 1 week's worth of emails. Sony objected. WikiLeaks says it's newsworthy and in the public interest. And everybody else, well, they ignored it. Big deal or big whoop?
Well, it's a big whoop so far, isn't it? That is the story. The fact that, you know, there's not any new revelations here. You know, it hurts people's security. It hurts people's, you know, they just got personal data in there about employees and things at Sony. It's embarrassing. It's very stressful for the people there. I didn't see a quote from the MPAA weighing in and saying how wrong they objected to this, but I assume that they made their objections heard. But yeah, you know what? Guess what? Once you start to dig deep down into documents of a major corporation, it's not that interesting. Somebody's going to have to do a lot of legwork to see if there's any news in there.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, there's no journalists left to be paid to do that, so we never know.
One of Madonna's most famous opening acts was the Beastie Boys, rappers who loved freaking...
So what you want?
Well, I wanted to finish reading the thing.
Okay.
Here. Oh, okay.
Continue.
You might recall Beastie Boys. They were the rappers who loved freaking out the preteen girls with their raucous and not kid-friendly stage show. Speaking of not kid-friendly, she's gone a little safer, although not much, on her new tour, asking comedian Amy Schumer to open for her in New York City. Schumer will warm up the crowd for 3 nights at Madison Square Garden and in Brooklyn. She's going to do that individually, one person at a time. Warm them up. Big yellow, big whoop.
Why are you slut-shaming her?
Because she does that to herself. That's her whole shtick.
I've seen her show. I don't recall her slut-shaming herself.
Oh, my God. I've seen her live. That's what she does.
I haven't seen her live. Okay. She rubs up. Did she touch you?
No, she did not.
Was it a bad touch? Amy Schumer's opening. Amy Schumer is a very hot comedian. She's got a good show. My brother and his wife can't stop watching it. I've now seen like 18,000 episodes of it over and over and over again, even though it's only in the third season. But she's very funny. It's kind of cool of Madonna to pick up on that. And it's interesting. There was a really good New York Times story on Comedy Central. We've linked to it in the show notes. It's very in-depth. It's from the magazine. And it talks about a lot of stuff going on in the industry. It uses Comedy Central to talk about all the changes roiling television and how Comedy Central is dealing with it, how they think the future of where they're going to make money is not necessarily on cable, because they've got shows like Key and Peele that draw like, you know, 2 million viewers, but they've got like 100 million YouTube streams. You know, they've got a lot of publicity and attention online. Same with what's it called? Broad World?
Yes.
I'm saying it wrong.
Broad Girls or?
I'm the worst person in the world. You've got a fine show and I just messed it up. But it's a really good
article. And I've seen the show and it's actually hilarious.
It's a good article. It's very in-depth. It's got a lot of interesting stuff that we talk about on the show all the time. Broad City is what it's called.
Yes, thank you.
And you should check it out. And Amy Schumer's in there because they mentioned how they were doing a roast for, I think, Charlie Sheen. And Comedy Central had not put her show on the air yet. It was a couple years ago. But they were working with her. They had her in development. And they said, we're going to put Amy Schumer on the panel. And the Sheen's people are like, no, we never heard of her. Nobody's heard of her. We don't want her. Like, no, you're having Amy Schumer. They're like, no, we don't know who she is. They're like, no, we're putting on Amy Schumer. She was the head of the show, and she did so good right after the show. They were like, Charlie Sheen's people wanted to work with her, and did she want to be on his next project? I mean, they were just crazy about her. So they have long relationships with talent. It's an interesting story about how they develop it. You should check it out.
Yeah, and I love the way they call it the post-TV era.
Exactly. Yeah. The TV is the new TV. That's a book by Michael Wolff, which just hit the stores, talking about how TV is the new TV because it's now available in so many different ways, but that's where all the heat and attention is.
You know what? We should try and get Michael on the show to talk about it.
Sure.
Sony is rolling the dice on an original sci-fi film called Passengers. Apparently, studio head Tom Rothman dithered and dithered, but finally decided the green light is ready. Thanks to having Lord and Stars Jennifer Lawrence at $20 million and Chris Pratt at $12 million. It's a sci-fi romantic drama, sort of a Gravity with a love story, and the budget is $120 million. I heard it was like $150 million.
Well, but yeah. We'll get to that in just a second.
Oh, well, I guess, you know, when you add the big back ends in for Lawrence, it'll be $150. Wait, that sounds rude. Big back ends for Lawrence. She's not Kim Kardashian. Hey, she looks great. Big deal or big whoop.
I think it's a big whoop, of course. Movie with two massive stars is greenlit. Who cares? A couple things. One was the budget. They kept saying the budget was $150 million, and then they said, oh, it's actually $120 million with incentives, which means your budget is $120 million. It's not $150. Make up your mind. It can't be both. You know, they love to do that. They love to make, oh, we're spending so much money, we can't give you a big salary, Jennifer. But on the other hand, they're like, well, actually, we're saving money with tax breaks. It's actually only $120. So you don't get to use both numbers, people. You only get to use the number that you're actually spending. You cannot name a budget and then say with an asterisk, oh, by the way, $40 million of that is offlaid by tax breaks. Well, then it's not in the budget. That's not the budget. The budget is not the money you didn't spend. The budget is only what you actually spend, which in this case is $120 million. Sperling, could you let Hollywood know that?
I'll do my best. I'll start one by one, just like Amy Schumer does at her show.
And rub up against each studio exec and say, look, when you say the budget, if you're going to name the budget, you cannot include money that wasn't in the budget. Well, how hard is that to understand? By the way, the Sony was worried. Tom Robbins said, no, I don't know. This budget is too big. We can't do it. Could you make it down to $90 million? And the filmmakers and people were like, no, we can't possibly. Guess what? This movie was once budgeted at $35 million. That's when Keanu Reeves was going to star. Later, it was at $65 million. Now it's at $120 million. They couldn't possibly go any lower.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, when you're paying your stars that much money, you know, that's...
Well, that's what they deserve. What do you mean you're paying them that much money?
Now, I'm just saying, you know, you can't go below what you're paying your stars because you need them.
Jennifer Lawrence gets $20 million against 30% of the profit after the movie breaks even. So it's not first dollar gross, but it seems to be different than net profit. Is that what I'm understanding?
I guess so, but my question is, what is 30% of zero?
Well, it would be zero, but why are you assuming the movie won't make any money?
No, I'm just saying, well, because no movie makes money, if you know what I mean.
But they're not saying she gets 30% of net profit. They're saying she gets 30% of the profit after the movie breaks even, which sounds to me like they're saying, okay, we're saying the movie costs $120 million. Once it makes $360 million worldwide, then you get 30% of everything above that. And once it's more than $20 million, you start to get more money, which means if it costs $120 million to make and it grosses $360 million, then she gets 30% of whatever's left over after that. So if it makes $800 million, that's...
Oh my God, we've turned into a math show.
Right. It's like 30% of, like, you know, $20 million, you'd have to make... $20 million would be 30% of 20, 40, 60. So would be $600 million. It would be 30%, 400, 300, 30. It'd be like $200 million, right? 30% of $200 million would be no. That would be we're gonna cut all this out, right?
Now we're not.
I'm sorry. I should have done the math before, and I thought about it, but I ran out of time.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, in Rothman's defense, you know, the script has been around for, like, you know, umpteen years, I think 5-6 years. It's been, you know, hanging around Hollywood, and he came in February, and, you know, the film was waiting for a green light, and he's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, because either he says, look, the budget's too high, I'm cutting it loose, I'm going to put it into turnaround, and then it's going to go to some other studio, two of whom were actually very interested in picking it up, with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence attached at the budget that the filmmaker Morton Tilden wanted. Of course, he of Imitation Game fame, he directed The Imitation Game. And so he said, look, I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't, I may as well make the movie.
That is the stupidest reason to make a movie I've ever heard. I'll make it and somebody else will make it, and then I'll lose money and I'll look like an idiot because it's a big hit. That's a terrible reason to make a movie, out of fear.
Well,
either you think it's a good idea or you don't. You've got the stars, you've got the budget, you got the money. Be a man. To say you made the movie because you were scared someone else would make it and it would be a hit, you're an idiot. You're a complete idiot if that's why you greenlit the film, Mr. Rothman. You can call me up to hear it. Don't you think so?
Hold on, I'm just getting him on the other line here.
Please, I would love it. That's ridiculous. If you think it's a bad idea, don't make it. Oh, but they were ready to jump. It was going to be made. And so he's like, uh-oh, I guess I better make it.
Well,
that is no way to run a studio.
Well, if we haven't bored our listeners enough with math, why don't we talk about Billboard?
The math behind their formula. Great.
Billboard, you know, Michael, as you know, they're always tweaking their formula behind all of their various charts, the Hot 100, the Top 200. When they're picking a number one song, what weight should you give, say, radio play versus sales versus digital sales? It ain't easy, Michael. They've also got a social 50 chart, which indicates the songs everyone is talking about on social media. Billboard just added Vine and Tumblr to the mix for this chart. Big deal or big whoop?
It's a big whoop, right? I mean, Vine and Tumblr, duh. If you're gonna chart social attention, you should have added Vine and Tumblr a while ago. But I guess, you know, you got to act some point, and they're catching up.
Brian Williams has been, well, demoted. He apologized on air with Matt Lauer on the Today Show, though he awkwardly danced around the whole idea that he deliberately lied.
Now, because he doesn't think he did.
Well, and now he's got a job at MSNBC where Williams will be the anchor for breaking news. Other duties will presumably arise down the road. Just don't get me started. Lester Holt is now the official permanent anchor for the evening news, even as he ceded the crown in one key demo to ABC. Big deal or big whoop?
I think it's a big deal. Why did he stay?
I know. Well, because I'm sure he needed something to jump off from, and he didn't want to be quote unquote fired over this. He'd rather quit. But
then you walk away from tens of millions of dollars.
Yes, exactly. I mean, they basically lowered his salary, I mean, the whole thing is a complete mess.
Did they actually release the report or the investigation? I don't think so. Did they?
No, not
yet. Right, because as we looked into it more, he had told pretty consistent story for many years. He wasn't as outrageously wrong as, you know, it was what other people said to describe, you know, it really did not seem as outrageous, but no, he lied about other things too, apparently.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. It just
it seemed to me that the brand new people over there at NBC, the Comcast folks, kind of maybe got a little spooked by all the social media attention being paid to this. And really, Brian Williams is saying, I'm really sorry that you think I lied. I may have exaggerated a bit, but I'm not lying. I was in Iraq. The helicopters were shot at, you know.
I didn't purposely lie to people, he's saying. Right. He's saying at one point, you know, he messed up towards the end, but for many years he told the same story. And towards the end, he messed up, didn't carefully edit a piece that was written that he read on air, etc. But I'm not sure what the other thing was where he said he was looking at somebody in the eye on a horse during some other big event. But in fact, he was on a balcony, you know.
Yeah.
It just seemed to, I guess he couldn't walk away from all the money. He wanted some platform to work. When there's breaking news, if you're turning to MSNBC, there will be Brian Williams going, hey, how's it going over there?
Yeah, exactly. And saying, hey, is resumes, are they printed on 24-pound paper now, or do you just do it on, yeah. Speaking of resumes, you know, I'm thinking, well, you'll see, because my question is, does a friend of the Broccoli's know something that we don't? And the Broccoli's, they produce, you know, this little tiny film called the James Bond series. UK bookies are reacting to a rash of bets suddenly placed on actor Damian Lewis to be the next James Bond. Lewis has appeared in numerous films and TV shows, including Band of Brothers and, of course, Homeland. Other names bandied about include Idris Elba, Tom Hardy, and Michael Fassbender. Meanwhile, Daniel Craig is saying, guys, I'm James Bond, and the next movie in which I play said role comes out in the fall. Big deal or big whoop?
This could not be more of a big whoop.
Okay.
Though I'm intrigued by who placed bets suddenly and why. They got a string of bets. That's why they say they've changed the odds. Or maybe they just wanted to get people excited about it and betting money on Damian Lewis. Not that he wouldn't make a fine Bond. I could see him as Bond. But why not? I don't know. They got to go different again. They can't go tough, harder, older. Idris Elba would be an interesting choice.
Well, if you're going different, let me give you my phone number, Mr. and Mrs. Broccoli. You could not get a more different James Bond than me.
I would go back towards more of the Roger Moore, you know, get me a James McAvoy. You know, we got to mix it up. That's what I say. Tom Hardy and Michael Fassbender would be too much like Daniel Craig. Idris Elba would be a change. A woman would be too much of a change. Rupert Everett at one point was going to play a bisexual James Bond, not a secret agent. They weren't going to actually make him James Bond, but that would have been a nice, interesting change. But, you know, James McAvoy, what about him?
What about Tom Hardy? I mean, would he even
he's too much like Daniel Craig. What about Chris Pratt, says Chris Pratt's agent? He gets every other franchise.
Networks love to find hits in the summertime, Michael, as you know. Sure, they program year-round now, but summer is still an experimental period. Hitting the bullseye feels like a win-win when it's hot out because you never know what will work. Well, we'll tell you what works. Watching stars, and especially watching stars, play the feud. Yes, Celebrity Family Feud with Steve Harvey reached 8.5 million viewers, the strongest start of any show this summer. You can expect more celebrities and more feuding for a while to come. Big deal or big whoop?
Survey says big whoop. But good for them. I like Steve Harvey. I don't know why, but I do.
But you don't like Inside Out. Unbelievable.
I did like Inside Out. I just didn't love it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that wraps up Big Deal or Big Whoop for this week and moves us along into Inside Baseball, where we analyze some of the headlines that have the entertainment industry buzzing. We'll explain what they mean for the business and, more importantly, how they affect you.
This is a story where we had to keep changing the copy even as we were going to show, right?
Yes.
It's like, just changed again.
Yes. Thank you, Eddie Q from Apple. We appreciate it. But basically, long story short, Apple announces this thing last week, this music streaming service, 30 million songs, pay a monthly fee of $10 and you get it. You get 3 months free, right? Sounds like a good deal.
Everybody gets to try it out. Everybody in the Apple universe gets to try it out for 3 months free. But people weren't happy, were they?
No, well, I'll tell you who wasn't happy. Indie record companies, because they're like, wait, we're not getting any money for 3 months, but we live month to month. Unlike those big three corporate giants that you spoke with and hashed out all these terms with that you are now forcing down our throats. You didn't come to us and ask us anything. You talked to three big giant record labels, cut a deal that we now have to live with. And guess what? We actually have this thing called cash flow that we have to kind of, you know, deal with.
And we they might have their big album of the year coming out in this 3 months. And if they lose sales because it's available for free on Apple and iTunes, which they would probably lose sales on, they might go out of business.
That's right. I mean, imagine if you were an artist, you release your album at some point when this, maybe you're releasing it in July, right? Right when this starts and there's, you know, 800 million people, although that would be a lot, but like 100 million people all streaming music via this Apple Music. When you would be making most of your streaming revenue during that three-month period, they're saying, we're not going to pay for that now. We'll pay.
They don't really make streaming revenue, but they're worried about making their album available and not making a sale.
Right.
But the problem is they did a bad launch. We didn't really cover it strongly when we talked about the show last week, but their presentation was kind of muddled and people were not happy about it. They were confused. They weren't sure what was being offered, how it worked. And as others pointed out, they were missing the biggest artist of the year, which is Adele, the biggest artist of the last decade, which is Taylor Swift, and the biggest artist of all time, the Beatles. So there were a lot of people not on board, and Taylor Swift in particular put out a statement saying, hey, this isn't right. We don't ask for free iPhones. Why are you asking us for free music for 3 months? That's not right.
Now, what did you read her whole letter to Apple? Love, Taylor.
That's right.
She wrote it on
But Apple responded, didn't they?
They did. In fact, Eddie Q, who is the head of iTunes and their digital media over there, he said on Twitter, he said, you know what? We'll pay you. And he did this like late Sunday. And when I saw this, I thought, somebody may be drinking. Okay, because he shouldn't be doing this on a Sunday.
Well, he ran it by Tim Cook as well.
Yes, we only found that out later. Thank you, Peter Kafka of Recode. But
of course he ran it by Tim Cook.
He
can't make a decision on his own. That's not a secret.
What I loved about Peter Kafka is
I'm giving away free iWatches. You know, it doesn't work that way.
And by the way, we don't make iWatches. We make Apple Watches.
Oh, thank you very much.
But he said on Twitter,
I see what you were doing there.
# Apple Music will pay artists for streaming, even during customers' free trial period. And he didn't really elaborate at all. And then Peter Kafka, the best part about Peter Kafka's piece, he had no information. So he said, you know, in the absence of any information on this, let's just speculate. It's the internet.
That's like, what we do every day.
Yeah.
Why did this happen? They responded to Taylor Swift. Obviously, it was not a big deal. You know, okay, Taylor Swift said, oh, this isn't right. Okay, yeah. And there were a lot of artists that she said were unhappy, but didn't feel they had the, you know, visibility or power to speak out about this. And Apple responded. Why did they do it? Just because they felt bad? They hadn't thought about it before? What made them change their minds?
I think that basically they looked at it and realized that they were looking a bit like the 800-pound gorilla that they are, that they could
PR.
Yeah, that they could basically go in and say, listen, I want you to deliver me eggs for the next 3 months for free. If any of my customers who eat in my restaurant, if they like them, I will pay you once they come back to my restaurant and pay me for future eggs. It's like, we need the revenue coming in on a monthly basis or on a regular basis. And
we can't feed our chickens.
Yeah. So no, we're not going to do that. So that's what all the indie record labels, not all of them, but a majority of them felt like saying. And there were some that were saying, but Apple is so big. Can we do that?
Well, no, the indie labels haven't signed on yet, a lot of them. And there are stars, I think, on the major labels that felt cajoled into this, even though they didn't want to be a part of it. But you know what? They're going to pay for 3 months. Big deal. It's not that much money. They probably said, well, what will we be forking out over that 3 month period? And they did the numbers and said, it's not that much. I mean, Apple wants good PR. It's not worth 3 months of free stuff in order to have a black guy and look bad and look like a meanie. The other thing they said is, we're going to pay the highest royalty rate of anyone. They pay 70%. By God, we'll pay 71.5%.
Right. But, they were looking...
So it's like this modest change, but they can say we pay the most.
Well,
and that's all that. It doesn't matter if it's still pennies for each artist. They can still say we pay the most.
Well, and what they're saying is that 71.5 times 800 million is a lot of money. And I get what they're saying there. They're also saying that the reason we paid 71.5 was because we were asking for those 3 months for free.
It is not a lot of money. It's not a lot of money yet, because what the actual artist gets for the use of their song is still pennies. It's not a lot. 70% isn't a lot. 71.5%. What's a lot is a royalty rate of actual money for your music. It's not a lot of money. It's 70% of what? You know, what matters is how much the artist actually gets paid based on how much music is listened to. And it's still not profitable for them particularly. It works for the labels because they get a cut before the artist does. It works for the streaming companies because they don't have to create music and they get audiences and they get 30% of stuff that, that people pay for. But it's not working yet for the artist. Taylor Swift is still right that the artist is not making enough money on the back end.
I like
free
the way
is insane, but, you know.
I like the way that she said, I'm only withholding, well, she didn't say this, but if you read between the lines, she's saying it. I'm withholding my newest album, 1989. All the other albums will be there, but 1989 won't.
Well, what do you mean? That's, I mean, catalog is often treated more differently than the latest release.
Yes. But she didn't say I'm totally
You felt
out.
Like it was disingenuous or was
no,
not?
No. It's just something I'm pointing out. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
you know, if you're in the UK... and you like Taylor Swift, I hope you don't rip her CD so you can listen to it on your iPhone. Because guess what? That's still illegal. In the US, that's called fair use. In a lot of the world, that's fair use. If you buy a CD, you can make a digital copy to listen to one on one of your devices, like your laptop or your phone. That's, you're allowed to do that. But in the UK, it's against the law.
Okay.
It's a crazy little thing. And it's the court ruled, no, you can't do that. We had to have some payment in play, like royalties for blank CDs and other ways to make sure that people get compensated for the lost music that there is, even though most of the time you're ripping a CD to use it yourself. And so, you know, there's a lot of crazy laws out there in the world. The royalty rates are still low. And I think no matter what's going on, streaming money is making more and more money, but it ain't getting down to the artists.
Well, yeah, I mean, in the way the streaming companies look at it is I'm paying 70 or 71.5% in the case of Apple to the rights holders. They provide they own the copyright. They're the ones I pay. I will pay 71 or 70% of all the money that I collect to them. And then they have to distribute it however their contracts work. My contract says I pay the rights holder. I'm doing
that. But the point is, you're also offering the service for $10 a month. Maybe it should be 20. Maybe 10 is too low. If you double the amount of money you charge, maybe then the money that the artist would get would actually be somewhat more substantial. But you're charging it so low that nobody's buying music, but they're streaming it. Because it's such a cheap price. It's $10. That's the problem. The problem is not the percentage. The problem is how much money they're charging for the service. If they can't provide a fair amount to the artists, then they need to raise their prices. Because $10 won't work unless they get everybody in the world to sign up for it. And that's what Apple is claiming they'll be able to do. Unlike everybody else, they're going to get everyone to pay $10 a month. And now you'll have a big enough amount of money to actually make substantial money. We'll have to see if it works out.
In any case, how does it affect us? It doesn't really affect us other than we still get 3 months free. It's just that now we don't have to feel guilty about it, I suppose.
That's true. You make a good point. Now we can listen to it with an open heart, knowing that Taylor approves.
Yes. by the way, there's a line outside Taylor Swift's door of artists who would like her to take up their cause. But that ends, where are we? We're in Inside Baseball, so that brings us to, obituaries.
Whoa, don't seem so sad. There's only one this week. It's writer James Salter. He died at 90 years old, a good full life, a great writer. And the New York Times had a lovely obituary about him. We link to it in the show notes. He's the author of Dusk and Other Stories, which is the first book I read by him, and A Sport and a Pastime, and The Hunter, which is about his time as a fighter pilot in Korea, All That Is, Light Years, you know, just an excellent writer. And it was some little sad comment, though, in his obituary, where he never really achieved the broad popularity he wanted, like any writer would. And he said, quote, "You can't be admitted to the ranks of writers of importance unless you have sales," end quote. And I found that surprising. I mean, there's so many examples of writers that weren't appreciated in their lifetime and that they became popular or well-known long after, or writers who never had big sales, but they've always been admired and respected and are still talked about. You know, it just seems like an odd thing for such a good writer to say or to think. But I guess some people get, you know, they want to know that people are reading their work. Have you ever heard of him?
No, I had not.
Ah, there you go. Poor James. Well, he's well worth checking out if you've never read him before.
And when you do read him, make sure that the record label gives him his royalties or his estate, his royalties. Yeah, I'm just
the
saying.
The record label.
Yeah, that was the joke.
I love his single. Yeah.
But that wraps up our show this week. Remember that you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, the Microsoft Marketplace, Stitcher, anywhere they give podcasts away for free, your favorite podcast catcher. Rate, review the show in those podcast aggregators. It does help us out. Links to all the stories we've discussed on today's episode can be found on our website, showbizsandbox.com. That's where you'll find those ways to subscribe to us, ways to contact us. You can email us dirt@showbizsandbox.com, or you can leave us a voicemail, 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. You can follow us on Twitter, where our username is @ShowbizSandbox, or you can like us on Facebook. Just search for Showbiz Sandbox and our page should show up. Again, all this information, showbizsandbox.com. The music you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT. They can be found on their own website, who is MGMT.com. Michael Giltz, you have a website, and every week it's something new and exciting. What is it this week?
IKnowGoodAtMath.com.
IKnowGoodAtMath, or English, in fact, .com. But, you know, if you have any trouble finding Michael's coverage of the entertainment industry there, try, well, MichaelGiltz.com would be a good place to start, or you can head on over to the Huffington Post to read some of his coverage there. Or you can, of course, visit BookFilter.com. Some of my work can be found on CelluloidJunkie.com. Until next week. Play nice.
Next week, no numbers. None.
Even box office?
None. The number one movie made a lot of money. The number two movie made a lot of money, but not as much. That'll be fine.
You just afraid of actually having to do the math?
Apparently.